Welcome to Crunching Tackles, where we break down the hardest hitting social issues in sports. On today's show, we check in on the football headlines from both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. With more Premier League madness and the NFL playoffs underway, there certainly is a lot to talk about. My name is Chad Wiley, and with me, as always, is John Nekrasov. And John, I'm wondering if you think the reason why Nikki Haley came third in the Iowa caucus is because she couldn't pronounce Caitlin Clark's name correctly at a town hall.
I think, you know, that is a sports and culture intersection like we've never heard before. And I think that has to be a factor that we consider among many other things that are contributing to the unfortunate state of affairs, shall we say, in our country on this. Is it a Tuesday?
It is a Tuesday. Yeah,
it's a Tuesday. I'm like, just full disclosure, my brain is like sort of all over the place. Not only because I've been like trying to figure out my audio software, but also because I've been snowed in for like 2 days now. We've got like 6 inches of snow here in Nashville, which is like maybe the most snow I've ever seen here, which is kind of unbelievable. So anyway, I've been working from home. I am sitting in my apartment. I've taken a couple walks outside. But other than that, I've just been like, not like imprisoned. I think imprisoned is a really harsh word, but like I have just been watching football and rewatching Denis Villeneuve movies.
So you've been quarantined.
I've been
something
quarantined.
We all understand.
Very familiar. So yeah, that's my state as we're getting ready to talk about all this stuff. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I have decided, I think, that while I'm refusing to engage in podcasts seriously, I'm thinking about weaving some sort of joke into every opening of this podcast until election day. I remember I did that because we did that one time with DeSantis being blamed. Trump blamed DeSantis for Florida State not making the college football playoffs.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that.
And I feel like I'm just kind of committed to this bit now. And so
I think we're going to roll with it.
But I'm obviously refusing to actually speak about this publicly in like a serious matter. But like for the content, I'm willing to go there a bit, I think.
As Logan Roy once said, I say to the American people, I love you, but you are not serious people.
You are not serious people. No, I'm good. Life is really good. I'm kind of ignoring my personal fandom in sports right now.
That's valid.
Be it the Steelers, be it Rafael Nadal, be it Manchester United, topics that may come up later on in this podcast. Yeah, just not a great personal time for me other than UNC basketball up to fourth in the AP poll. So things are going good there. Yeah, such is life, but we carry on. We carry on, John. And the sports never stop.
They don't stop. I don't know. Do you want to get into our first, just like, we want to talk about fun. We are going to talk about the NFL playoffs, which is why you're all here.
Yeah.
Because that's why I'm here, to be honest. But to begin with, we have some complex topics to get out of the way first.
Yeah, in many ways this is like the big serious story we're gonna do. It's the actual culture, the intersection of sports and culture that we, you know, tout that we do on this podcast before right. We get into our rank punditry about Josh Allen and his ability to run over Steelers players at will.
It's a little embarrassing.
And we talked about the story, what was it, 1 month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago?
Something like a month ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everton, who had been faced with a historic and unprecedented points deduction for financial fair play. We talked about how it had moved them from being comfortably in the mid-table to being in the relegation zone, and how this was really going to be catastrophic for them. It turns out that it could get more catastrophic, and in fact, it is. As both Everton and Nottingham Forest, another Premier League team, have been hit with new financial charges under the same statute that we talked about last time, the profit and sustainability clause, part of financial fair play. You know, obviously, depending on how these go, there is the potential of more point deductions for Everton, of point deductions for Nottingham Forest, now that this precedent has been set. There's a lot of confusion, and I think as we talk through this, we want to kind of first clarify like the timeline of what's actually happening here and why it's happening again to Everton. Then we can talk a little bit about what it means for the league. I think a lot of our discourse from our last podcast is about how it might impact Manchester City and the way that this is being adjudicated. I don't think a lot of that opinion necessarily changes based on this, for me at least. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does for you either necessarily. But in terms of new information, this is obviously a huge blow to Everton in particular, and then also Nottingham Forest.
Right. So I guess maybe we should explain kind of what exactly is going on, because it's kind of confusing, right? Like, Everton was just hit with a charge for violating the profitability and sustainability clause, like you mentioned, which essentially means you can't lose £105 million as a club over the course of 3 years. That's just like the bare bones of the rule. If you lose that much, you breach the rules. There are some exceptions to the rule that kind of like help your finances. And one of those exceptions to the rule is that the COVID seasons, so 2019 to 20 and 2020 to 2021, are counted as 1 year. So during the COVID time frame, basically you can lose £105 million over 4 years instead of three, which kind of gives you a little bit of extra space to make up losses if you need to that happened during COVID. Everton was charged in November, from what I remember, and then were docked the points, which was an unprecedented thing, like you said. Now, what's happened here is that punishment was for the period ending in the 2021 to 2022 season. So that season and the three seasons before it were what they were charged for. Everton, in December, just filed the paperwork of its finances for the 2022 to 2023 season. And the Premier League has just charged them again for losing £105 million over the course of those 4 years. So there's an overlap, right? Three of those years in these new charges were covered in the previous charges and the previous penalty. Everton is obviously not happy about that, because what has happened here is objectively double jeopardy. Mm-hmm. They've been penalized for the same 3 years twice, along with the 1 year that's just been added on. So they're not happy about that, and they're going to appeal it, as will Nottingham Forest. However, if the Premier League rules against them, what potentially could happen is that Everton could lose 20 points in the course of one season, right? Which would be absolutely catastrophic. They're sitting at 17 points right now. If they lost another 10 points, they would be at 7, which is 2 points below the worst team in the league, Sheffield United, which is at 9. And it is very, very, very difficult. You know, people talk about relegation, like the threshold for escaping relegation is 40 points. So if you get to 40 points, then you lose 20 automatically. Even if Everton has an okay season to keep themselves afloat, they could still very well go down. And they've been a solid team this year, you know, but this is it's a serious thing. And it's also, last point, this all comes under the shadow of the fact that Everton's just been charged, and Forest have each been charged with one breach of these rules. Manchester City is currently charged with 100, right? And the Premier League has said today that a date, which has not been announced, has been set for Man City's hearing sometime this season. But obviously people are upset, because these small teams that admittedly are being financially irresponsible have made poor decisions. But at the same time, it seems like City's being treated with a different standard, which maybe it should be. For your reaction to start, like, how do you think these situations are different, and do you think the Premier League is treating them both fairly?
Yeah, I think you gave a great synopsis there. It gives me quite a few jumping points I want to get to. But first, to answer your question, I think Everton is being treated fairly, having been, you know, now acute charged multiple times for overlapping time periods? I mean, under the rules, it does make sense. I do want to come back to this particulars of COVID maybe later on in this and talk about why that might change my opinion a little bit. But like, objectively, the ruling does make sense. But I think a lot of this is going to depend on what happens with Manchester City, right? Because we can look at these charges one a piece and say, well, yes, they are rule breaches and they will face a penalty. And if Manchester City face a much more severe penalty, after they are investigated and adjudicated and a decision is made, then we'll look back on this process and say, good, everything was handled fairly. If City are deemed by comparison to be treated lightly or to get off completely, either because they have more money to pay better lawyers or because they're a more important team to the Premier League, then I think we're going to have to come back here and have a much more serious conversation about the disparity in football. I mean, it's hard to just react to this as it is without knowing what's going to happen with City. I do want to talk briefly, though, and just explain to people who may not be as big of soccer fans as you and I are, particularly, John, for Everton, like, you say, okay, they might get relegated. That would be bad. Like, what? How is relegation bad for a club like Everton? If you haven't been following the Premier League for, you know, a long time, Everton have been teetering on the relegation line for a few years now. In fact, didn't it go down to the final day this last year that kept Everton back in the Premier League? So, I mean, they've been on the edge. Leicester City, obviously, was a big club that went down last year. I think we talked about that. But, like, why would relegation be such a severe punishment for a team like Everton to face?
So, the biggest deal, I mean, it just comes down to money, right? Which is what this whole conversation is about. And that's kind of like oversimplifying things. But the reality is, if you're inside the Premier League, you get, I don't have numbers in front of me, but you get an exponentially higher amount of revenue from TV contracts in particular, just by being part of the Premier League. By competing in that premier product, you get money that other teams, even as a small team in the Premier League, like Everton, you get money to play around with that other teams in European leagues don't have. So what happens if you go down is you immediately lose that source of income, right? Which means that you're paying for a roster that you cannot afford in any way because the income gap is so big. So you're trying to deal with a wage bill, trying to cut players left and right. And often what happens with teams that go down is that they start to spiral. There are some that are well managed and function within their means and kind of bounce up and down. But if you're a big team that wasn't operating within your means in the Premier League and kind of relying on the money coming in from the league to keep you afloat, and then you go down, it's very easy to start spiraling. Sunderland Till I Die, which is a show we've talked about before, is a show that's about that very thing, about a team that is historically great, that has high expectations, and then just plummets. So it's kind of like with college football that we've talked about. You know, there is not just on-field consequences to losing. In soccer, unlike the NFL, where you're rewarded for failure so you can rebuild and keep parity, in soccer, you're punished when you're bad. And potentially punished to the point of destruction.
Yeah. You mentioned in your explanation the fact that the COVID years were combined into 1 year. Obviously, that's a nice thing to kind of equalize, you know, give teams a little bit of grace, given the fact that COVID was a catastrophic financial upheaval as well as, you know, just a life upheaval for everyone. But considering the fact that, like, a significant amount of two seasons were played in COVID, like, with empty stadiums, with all the different things going on, do you think just combining the two seasons was enough grace for these clubs, given the catastrophe financially that COVID was to everyone? Or, because I think for me, it seems like punishing any team for COVID-related finances seems... If you wanted to say that was unfair to everyone, I think I would accept that argument that it's just universally too harsh, specifically when you talk about the decline in attendance in person, things like that. It was just, just really, really expensive. You know, clubs wanted to continue to pay their other workers even when the season was shut down, like their concessions people, things like that. A lot of clubs took the generous step to continue to pay those people even when there were no games going on. That's only going to contribute to more financial losses. So do you think that even investigating this period of time is fair, or should they have just given a blanket grace period for any amount that included the COVID seasons?
Yeah, I mean, the Premier League's argument, which I understand, is that the excuses that Everton gave about COVID were not enough. That basically they continued to recklessly spend on players specifically. In a way that was beyond their means. And that's also what's, we've talked a lot about Everton, but that's the exact same accusation that's been leveled at Nottingham Forest.
I want to get there next.
A million players that's since they were promoted 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think there's the biggest argument, I think, in Everton's favor is that they were severely impacted by a situation outside their control, which was the Ukraine conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of suspect regimes that are involved in soccer right now. And I don't think that's good. But if the league isn't going to penalize you for choosing one, you know, the fact that Everton had ties to Russian oligarchs who were then obviously removed and their sponsorship money was removed caused Everton to lose a lot of money. And that, I think, I personally don't think if you're not going to penalize Saudi Arabian owned teams specifically for their involvement, I don't think it makes sense to penalize, or at least to not like take it into account that they were impacted by a circumstance like that was outside their control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and obviously the financial period that they have already received the deduction for would have included that initial spring of 2022, which is directly after the war started. Right. And then these new charges would include even much more, another year of the duration of that war going on. So that's a really important point, I think. John, I want to end where we kind of talked last time with Everton. And that's just the way that these rules are discouraging smaller teams from trying to compete. And I think Forest are a great example of that. Because believe it or like it or not, Forest are a team that tried really, really hard. And I think that's what you were hinting at. You know, they bought, and these names might not make sense to all of you who are listening, but Dean Henderson, Callum Hudson-Odoi, Jesse Lingard. I believe they had Keylor Navas for a time on their team. You know, they were known, like this was big news, was how much money in the 2022-23 season that Nottingham Forest spent on players in order to try to compete. It didn't work. Well, they survived. They didn't get relegated. They didn't get any of the financial benefits of qualifying for Europe, but they took a real gamble and now they're paying the price for it. And again, I just want to end on this conversation by saying, and by saying that I think that these rules are discouraging teams from trying to win and from trying to be good and are encouraging a system in which the six or seven best teams are the only ones who can win and all of the other teams in the middle just have to strive for the middle. And it's highly anti-competitive. And obviously there needs to be regulations in place, but I think they need to be better than this.
Yeah, I think it's a serious problem, and it's hard to deal with the bottom without dealing with the top, which is where this conversation ultimately ends. You know, it's bad for clubs when you are able to spend beyond your means because irresponsible owners end up destroying community assets, right? That's the reality. In soccer, because it's not like an incorporated cabal like the NFL or the MLB is, where they all revenue share and all that fun stuff, you know, if you don't survive financially, you can put your club out of business or administration, as they call it in England, and destroy it, essentially. And it becomes very hard to revive. And so I think that's why these rules are in place. And in that sense, I think they are a good. But you're right that they do destroy the competitive balance because we see that the same rules are not really being applied, at least consistently right now, to big teams. The way that money is being moved around in a team like Manchester City or United or Arsenal or Chelsea, all the big teams, I'm not just going to point fingers at Man City, we don't really have as clear of a picture of what their finances are, I don't feel like, and where that money is coming from and where the sponsorship deals are coming from. And until even lately, like laying aside the competitive balance question, until we're all assured that the Premier League is treating all these clubs with an equal standard and the money that's coming in is legit to each of these clubs, I don't feel like we have a fair standard to operate with. And I really don't feel like Everton and Forest fans have any reason not to feel aggrieved because they are being treated with a double standard.
Yeah. Anything else on the subject before we transition to some other sports?
No, I think we should talk about, well, I guess we have one other not fun thing and then more fun things.
Yeah, some not fun on the court and then some not fun off the court. Obviously, the Australian Open has started. I think you'll hear more about the Australian Open as we get closer to, you know, the heart of it. We're still in the very early rounds.
Right.
The big headline coming into it was that Rafael Nadal withdrew. Obviously, this is planned to be his final season. Mm-hmm. He had committed to try to play through the 2024 year. He was obviously hoping that he'd be able to play all four majors in this final year, but he aggravated his injury. And so he did play a couple tune-up tournaments, aggravated his injury, decided to withdraw from the Australian Open in order to prepare for the French Open, which is obviously the one that is most important to him of the four. So disappointing to have this tournament without him. And then more recently, there's been an announcement that he is going to be a partner with the Saudi Arabian government for the Saudi Tennis Federation. This was something that you, I think, very successfully pointed out on our last podcast when we discussed where Saudi Arabia might go next, and you said tennis. And, you know, lo and behold, here comes this headline. And so, John, you're welcome now to take a victory lap of being right about something that's objectively a very terrible thing to happen.
Well, that's a big hooray for me. I mean, yeah, I guess it's not surprising at this point. It's the age-old refrain of I'm not surprised and I'm not mad. I am just disappointed. And, you know, Messi's already doing it, right? Like, this is not new for our favorite superstars, but it is disappointing every time that it happens. I don't have a ton to say about Rafa doing this, to be honest. Like, I don't, as of like a lifelong fan of him, I don't know if you have like more emotional reflections on it. For me, it's just like, it's a sign, number one, that the Saudis are going to move into tennis 100%. Like, that's the clearest play. You're taking an aging star who's not going to be super relevant in serious tennis anymore and saying, hey, even though you can't fully move forward as a tennis superstar anymore, what you can do is make money, advance your legacy, and also advance our legacy. It's a natural play, I think. But it's an unfortunate one.
Yeah, I mean, as a Nadal fan, I was never a Nadal fan because I knew anything about his politics or his opinions. He's a good player. In my opinion, he was the best player until this past year. So, I mean, I'm just a fan of his game. I guess before we move on, let me just ask briefly, do you think that there's a difference, and maybe is it worse for players who, you know, maybe you sign a contract to play in Saudi Arabia because you're going to make a lot of money, you're competitive, you want to be on the team. Is it worse to be an ambassador for the country like Messi and like Nadal are compared to just a player who decides to play in their domestic league for a lot of money? Because like these foreigners, these Argentinians and Spaniards who want to actually become ambassadors for the country, feels like a slightly different relationship and a more nefarious relationship, in my opinion.
I think that's a really good point, honestly. I mean, you're a brand ambassador. You're a VIP for Saudi Arabia, in a way that like Jordan Henderson sort of was when he went there. But it's not the same. You're not like walking around being like in Saudi tourism ads. Like, I think we would all think it was deeply strange if, I don't know, some athlete went and like showed up in a North Korean tourism ad. Like, that would feel really uncomfortable, wouldn't
Dennis
it?
Dennis Rodman.
Like, you'd be like, are you a hostage? Like, are you insane? What's going on? Right. And this is like, maybe Saudi Arabia is not like fully North Korea, right? Maybe it's a step down from that, but still it's a repressive regime, mm-hmm. right? That you are displaying yourself to the world as like a big fan of. It's not just an athletic performance. I don't know. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think it's uncomfortable. It's disappointing. It's very strange.
Yeah. Onto the fun, I guess, now that we can get that stuff out of the way. The football on the American side of the pond has been just chaotic. I mean,
it's been insane. What a year.
What a week. What a two-week period we've had. And I can't wait to dive in. John, we're going to talk about some stuff that happened in the playoffs. We're going to talk about some of the highs, some of the lows. But we're going to start out with some coaching news.
There we are.
Some coaches who are leaving on their own terms. Some coaches who have been, you know, removed maybe against their will from their positions. And it's a really remarkable list. If you just you want to just read the names of NFL coaches who are out of their jobs.
Yeah. So we have, first of all, Nick Saban.
Yeah, which separately.
Is football, yeah. Separately. NFL coaches, though. Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, Mike Vrabel, Ron Rivera, Arthur Smith, you know, one of these things is not like the other. and then Nick Sirianni and Mike McCarthy are both likely to be fired in the next week, I would guess. We're not 100% sure about that.
And, but we have at least Tomlin is on the media hot seat, even though he seems to be secure internally with the Steelers organization.
Well, the question is he on the media hot seat or is he on his own hot seat? That's the question.
Mm. Well, he said he's staying.
He said he's staying afterward?
He, reported today, he's confirmed internally to the team and to his players that he is coaching in 2024.
Okay. Because that clip was really weird. That was a very strange media. If you didn't see it. A press reporter, it was like, any final questions? And someone's like, given that it's the last year in your contract, and he just like walked right out of the room.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
I'll just say, you know, we're going to focus on Nick Saban. We're going to focus on Bill Belichick. But that list, I think, is remarkable. The fact that Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll, and Nick Saban all were left their jobs within a 4-day period is one of the most star-studded list of exits in that compressive time frame that's ever happened in any sport.
It has to be the largest. Yeah.
Those are three of the all-timers. Those are three first ballot Hall of Famers.
I mean Nick Saban retired and Bill Belichick got fired within a day of each other.
Yes. And Pete Carroll is not quite either of those two, but again, like consistently one of the top three NFL coaches for the last 20 years. A remarkable coach. Just briefly, on some of those lesser names, Nick Sirianni's not getting fired.
You don't think so?
I mean, they were in a Super Bowl 1 year ago.
I think it would be weird, but it feels like he's lost the locker room. We're going to get into the Eagles in a little bit.
Possibly.
Something is rotten in Philadelphia.
I would be really surprised. Mike McCarthy's out of there.
He's fired, 100%.
I want to talk a lot more about the Cowboys.
Again, we'll get there in a bit.
Yeah, but let's focus on the two, the A-listers of this list. Do you want to do Saban or do you want to do Belichick first?
I think you should take Saban first because of the two, he's your guy. And neither of us really like Bill. We respect Bill, but he can take second spot.
Yeah, I'm much more of a Bill guy since the departure of Tom Brady. But Saban is just the all-time, the GOAT of... I mean,
he's officially the GOAT.
He is the GOAT of college football, and you can have a very spirited debate between him and Coach K as the GOAT of college sports coaching altogether. Mm, okay. Those are the two. 7 national championships, 6 Alabama, 11 SEC titles, the 292 wins. I mean, we could do the whole thing. He basically created 2 entire NFL rosters worth of NFL talent, like over 100 players from his program became important NFL stars. A running back powerhouse. Recently a quarterback powerhouse in the league somehow.
Well...
not quite.
But jury's still on that.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the one of the most dominant stretches of coaching you'll ever see. I think he did it. There are those who would say, well, he was benefited by Alabama. Sure. We could talk about the fact that he won a national championship before when he was at LSU.
Yep.
We could talk about the state Alabama was in when he inherited it. They were middling to low SEC team. Obviously, Alabama was a storied franchise because of Coach Bear Bryant before, but they were not a powerhouse at the time that he took them over. Mm-hmm. And he turned the University of Alabama into the preeminent college football powerhouse. The coaching tree that he has left from Kirby Smart to people he's impacted more recently, like Steve Sarkisian, who's now doing great things at Texas, made the playoff, is remarkable. The record he has against his former assistants is unbelievable. And it's one of the most interesting times to depart as well, because he seemed to be mentally still sharp. He seems to still have his competitive drive. He had a good season this year. And we could, I think this could be a larger podcast, but it seems like his frustration with the future of college football played a large part of why he wants out now. The frustration over NIL, the frustration over the transfer portal, the changes that he was not part of. You know, he's part of the old guard. He's 72 years old. He, you know, grew up in a different world. And so it's interesting to see some of the all-time greats have a difficulty adapting to some of these new things. And Saban definitely seems like one of those guys. But there have never been bigger shoes to fill in any coaching vacancy. Literally Coach K is the one. And mm-hmm. So for Kalen DeBoer to step into these shoes, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what Alabama does and how much the Alabama brand name can survive Nick Saban. I've already seen a few players have decommitted from Alabama mm-hmm. since the announcement that he is leaving. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you want me to say about Nick Saban. He's the best. And it's been an absolute joy watching Alabama these past 12 years. That I've watched him since he won the championship in 2011. I know a lot of people have been sick of Alabama, have wanted to see Alabama constantly be dethroned. But the way that they have been the constant through all of these various eras of whatever, Tim Tebow, whoever you want to say, like all these different things going on, different styles of quarterback play, the evolution of the offense, Lincoln Riley playing the air raid offense, different things going on. The constant has been the type of football that Nick Saban wants to play can win championships. And for 17 years, that's exactly what he did. And he'll be missed. And I think that the football is going to be worse off without him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, just reacting to that a little bit, like I think unquestionably, he built Alabama over the last two decades into like the premier college football program. Like, there have been other programs that have been good. Clemson has been one that's been pretty solid. Michigan obviously just won this year.
Yeah.
LSU won a championship in the last few years.
Ohio State.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Alabama has been the college school, I think, and the SEC school. And I think that just goes to show the remarkable nature of Nick Saban. He's one of the most recognizable people in college sports, obviously, and in sports in general, I think. Way before I had any kind of awareness of football, I knew who Nick Saban was. And that is just a testament to what a legend he is. You know, he's in that, like, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, Alex Ferguson, Pep Guardiola, like, in that all the way at the top tier of what the best of what coaching is. And I think he also has done it while maybe not being like a beloved figure everywhere. I think he's a respected figure everywhere. I hear very little like constant negativity against Nick Saban, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is obviously not true for Bill Belichick, who will give his moment in a second. I think it's remarkable that you can go through a career and have the kind of the love that Saban's players continuously show to him. And I think that shows why he's such a good college coach specifically. You need to be someone who players can latch onto and learn from you, and also who demands excellence from you. And I think Nick Saban has done that for the last 17 years at Alabama and the rest of his career too.
Yeah, I do want to just highlight just a couple moments in Nick Saban's career that I thought were particularly interesting. I think the best Nick Saban ever was the 2011 season. When they were, you know, it was still under the BCS, but I think that they lose to LSU in the regular season that year, and then come out and they get a rematch with LSU in the national championship, and they just destroy them 21-0, completely shut out LSU. It's considered like the great defensive performance of all time, and then more recently, I think one of the things that's unique about Nick Saban is just his fearlessness when it comes to making tough decisions. I think about the 2018 SEC championship when Tua Tagovailoa, you know, who had replaced Jalen Hurts, gets hurt in that game while Alabama is trailing, and Jalen Hurts comes back in off the bench and leads the team to the win. And then I believe in the national championship. Before that, the reverse had happened, that Jalen Hurts had a bad performance and got replaced with Tua. and went on to win the national championship. So just kind of the ability to deal with the egos and not be scared to make a decision that, you know, it's controversial. I'm trying to remember the exact timeline, but I think it's before the 2018 SEC championship in a national championship game where Jalen Hurts is not playing well. He benches Jalen for Tua, wins the national championship that year. And then in 2018 in the SEC championship, Jalen Hurts comes back in kind of a redemption moment and wins the SEC championship against Georgia. And that was a really, you know, good Georgia team, the beginning of the Georgia run. So just a few moments. One of the all-timers. And we can talk about another one.
Yeah, I think we should talk about Bill Belichick, who is not beloved, I don't think. Even in Pat's country, I don't get the feel. I think they do appreciate him. But he's a prickly guy. I don't think all his players love him. But I don't think he wanted to be loved, to be totally honest. I think he wanted to win. And I think there are few people on this planet who are as dedicated to winning as Bill Belichick. Occasionally he cheated to do it. But the majority of the time, Bill Belichick was the best coach that has ever set foot in the National Football League. And I think that's an impressive accomplishment. Just listen to these stats for a second. He won 6 Super Bowls, all of which were with Tom Brady, for starters, out of 9. Both those 6 Super Bowl wins and the 9 Super Bowl appearances as a head coach are NFL records. He won 17 division titles. He appeared in the AFC Championship 13 times. He had 31 playoff wins, which is the most all-time, and 302 regular season wins, which is third behind Don Shula and George Halas, however you pronounce that. Those are like insane numbers.
Well, right? Just thinking about those stats, right? So just in the big games, right? So based on that, he goes, if he's in 13 AFC championships, he goes to 9 Super Bowls. That means he's 9-4 in AFC championships, and then he's 6-3 in Super Bowls, which is, so he's, you know, 2 out of 3 at the minimum in the biggest games of his career.
Mm-hmm. And that's like his playoff percentage is like way higher than Andy Reid's, for example.
Yeah.
And think about how good the Chiefs have been in the playoffs in the last 5-6 years. And yet Belichick was at the Patriots for 24 years and built a dynasty along with Tom Brady that dominated this sport like no one ever has before, and I'm convinced no one ever will after. I think that's a remarkable accomplishment. I am tired of the "it was just Tom Brady" nonsense. People need to give Bill Belichick his due. It was not just Bill Belichick. It was also Tom Brady. But they had a mind meld together, both defensively and offensively, that won the league countless times. And embarrassed people countless times in the NFL. And I think it's really impressive.
Yeah, I do want to linger on that just for a second, because I think that that is something that's going to live with Bill Belichick, specifically because Brady was the one who won a Super Bowl after they departed, right? And Belichick never did that yet. You know, obviously he's not retired yet, but
he's not retired.
I do think that's going to live with him, but you really don't have to look any further than Tom Brady's own statement about Bill Belichick to see how important Bill Belichick is. Like, the people who know the game, the people who are in and around that team, that culture, they will tell you that Belichick was the glue.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady will tell you, he said that. Like, people can look on the outside and say, well, Brady won the Super Bowl after. True. That was a good situation. He had a good coach then. Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't think anyone who's serious about football, and particularly those who know that locker room, would tolerate that kind of argument. And so I think I do agree with you that it needs to be stopped. But I don't think it will. I do think this is going to stay with Belichick.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, it's the Pats have been bad the last few seasons. I think that's partially Bill's fault. Brady was also not good every season, though he was good for a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note this is not him retiring. He did get fired. Yeah. Right? So I think that is like a mark. These last few years since Brady left have not been good. I think it's okay to recognize that.
Yeah. And I mean, on that point, he's still interested in playing and coaching football. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the hardest matches to make. Because he's only going to come into a situation that he thinks can win now. He's not, I don't think he's going to be around for a 5 to 7 year rebuild, mm-mm, which really limits the amount of opportunities he's going to have. Like, what is a really, really good team that's unsatisfied with their, you know, coaching situation, or maybe already made a change?
The Dallas, you know, Cowboys.
Yeah. The name that you didn't mention as well, who was fired this year mid-season, was Brandon Staley in Los Angeles with the Chargers. And
he sucks.
Yeah, he's really bad. And obviously, if the McCarthy job opens, you know, those are two options. If the Eagles job came open, for mm-hmm example, but he's not going to Washington. He's not going to Tennessee. I'm sorry, John. He's not going to a team that isn't ready to win immediately. And like, what really, really good roster is getting rid of their coach right now? There are very few of those. So I guess, do you see a natural fit?
So we know he's interviewed with the Falcons, and that's a good roster that needs a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
But it's a good roster. I think the rumors point there.
Yeah, in a division that he could win.
Because the rumors point there because Jim Harbaugh, the current Michigan coach, is heavily linked with the Chargers. I think the Chargers would be the next natural fit for Belichick. But it feels to me, and I felt this from the minute I thought about all the openings, that Harbaugh will go to the Chargers.
Okay.
In that case, I think you're looking at Belichick either waiting for the Cowboys or going to the Falcons, probably. That's where I'm at.
Let me throw one wrench. I think both of those fits are natural. If you were the Eagles and you felt like you could swap Sirianni for Belichick right now, would you make that jump? It's a risk.
It's a huge risk. Does Bill make that team better? I think he probably does.
I mean, right? for two or three years? You think so?
Because, I mean, they're in that window. They need to win right now.
Right, right.
Right. They're like teetering on the edge of potentially nosediving out of a dynasty that they're starting to build.
Right.
I think if they actually fire Sirianni, I think his name goes right in there.
Yeah. It's interesting. It'll be really interesting to see what happens.
We have a carousel, and it is turning rapidly. And the carousel is turning because the playoffs are here.
Let's get into it.
It's been chaotic.
Amazing. An amazing wild card weekend of football.
Not even a lot of close games, but they were results that we sometimes expected and sometimes didn't, and yet wanted all of them somehow. Yeah, I don't know how it happened.
The only really close game was Rams and Lions.
Yep.
All the other ones were double digits or two-score games. So I would like to talk first.
You know where we start.
With the Cowboys.
We start at AT&T Stadium.
We start with what I like to call the Stephen A. Smith highlight reel of the year, which is that every year Stephen A. Smith comes ready whenever, inevitably, as he says, somehow, the Cowboys will let their fans down, and it happened again.
It happened again.
Do we want to start with Cowboys bad or Packers good?
I want to start with Jordan Love.
Okay.
Because the story of the playoffs to me is Jordan Love and CJ Stroud dicing up their opponents. The Packers, who barely even made the playoffs, and the Texans, who also barely even made the playoffs until the last day of the season, are both in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Statement wins.
And Jordan Love looked elite. I have doubted him at times this season because at times he's not looked good. But I will freely admit that I am not the best evaluator of quarterback talent. And clearly the Green Bay Packers are better at it than me because they have identified Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and now Jordan Love, who looks like he could very well be the next Green Bay-like GOAT.
Yeah.
He destroyed the Cowboys with ease. But I think the reality, I'm going to get back to Stroud in a little bit. The reality is the Cowboys shot themselves in the foot because Dak Prescott cannot play when it counts. That's the reality. Jordan Love was good. Dak Prescott was really bad.
Yeah.
He had one interception that was almost returned for a touchdown and another one that was returned for a touchdown. You cannot do that and win playoff games, period.
The Cowboys were completely lost.
And totally.
They continue to be. Like, do they have a coach? Do they have a quarterback? The answer is probably no to both, as they continue to have one of the most talented defenses, led by Micah Parsons, and one of the most talented skill positions offensively with CeeDee Lamb that you will see in the NFL. And their quote-unquote offensive guru head coach and their quote-unquote leading quarterback have consistently kept them away from success.
People are talking about Dak as the MVP.
Right. This year.
This year.
I mean, I don't know what the solution here is. I don't know if it's one or the other. I don't know if it's both. I don't know if it's neither. I don't know. But they seem completely devoid of even comprehending what is wrong with their team. And it's funny. I just love it every year. It's funny.
Dak just, I think they have to find a new quarterback.
Yeah.
That's my last point on them.
And a coach?
Oh, coach is gone. But yeah, like okay. The Dak experience.
Not good.
The Dak experiment is over, I think.
Yeah. Rams, Lions. I mean, Lions are a really good team. They were the home favorite. I guess it's significant because it's the first Lions win in such a long time. But the game, I don't think was particularly.
No.
Eagles, Bucks, John. I don't want to dwell too long on each one of these matchups. But is this an Eagles implosion or are the Bucks better than we thought they were?
It's Eagles implosion, 100%. Okay. Is that even a question?
I don't think so. Not to me.
I feel like the Bucks were bad. The Bucks scored 9 points against the Falcons the week before, right? Against the Falcons.
Yeah.
9 points. They couldn't score a single touchdown against the NFC South team. The fact that Baker Mayfield played like this is a testament to him improving.
Yeah.
But it's also a testament to the fact that the Eagles are terrible. I hate to say it. I don't want them to be terrible. I kind of like most of their players to a degree, but they have fallen apart. I have never, with the exception maybe of Arsenal last year, seen a team fall apart so hard down the stretch.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know what happened. Something has happened in that locker room, I think, that has sucked the life out of that team.
Yeah. I mean, was it 6 weeks ago that they were on this podcast, the clear Super Bowl favorite?
They were 10-1.
Yeah, so, I mean, the final 7 weeks of the regular season and this reporters will be figuring out what happened in there and will let us know. Steelers-Bills, and this was a case with the Steelers where they weren't a playoff team and they made the playoffs because the Ravens rested their starters in week 18. They just weren't. They're not a quality roster. They didn't have a quarterback. Nope. Is there anything you want to say about this game?
All it tells me, my condolences first of all to you, the Bills are not perfect, but they are starting to fire on more cylinders than they were firing previously.
Yeah.
They won something like 5 straight, I think, to finish the season off and win the division, keep the Dolphins in a tough matchup with the Chiefs, and put themselves in the spot to advance to the next round. Josh Allen played a good game, and the Bills' success rides on Josh Allen being consistent, and this was a consistent game. I don't think they're perfect, but they can score points, and this game showed that. So yeah. We'll see what happens. But
yeah.
This, in a year where the AFC has been unbelievably inconsistent, the Bills have a shot at going far this year. That's my prediction.
Yeah. Browns, Texans, John. Browns an interesting team because they lose their starting quarterback, Deshaun Watson, the $300 million man, the one they traded all the picks for.
Yep.
They get better without him.
Yep.
They make the playoffs, and then they get absolutely curb stomped by a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. And you mentioned CJ Stroud earlier. One of the most incredible first half throwing performances in playoff history. Kind of coasted them through the second half, but comprehensive beatdown. And I think, do you want to talk about Stroud now? Because I do want to come back to the Texans when we talk about this upcoming week of games.
Let's talk about him. Return to him. But we'll just leave it. He was imperious.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. Whatever the cognition, like the S2 or whatever it was called.
the one that got Carolina to draft Bryce Young instead.
The biggest fraud of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Then Dolphins Chiefs, John. A game most notable for the appearance of Taylor Swift in the weather. Unbelievably cold.
Unbelievably cold.
Second coldest NFL game in history based on temperature and wind chill. Mm-hmm. A game in which my uncle attended.
That's insane.
Said he had a good time.
Sir, I don't know what to say, but I applaud your bravery.
Shout out to my Uncle Mark, a high school football coach, a history teacher, and a crazy person. Just want a brief anecdote from my text messages with my Uncle Mark. At one point, he said that the guy he went with, his friend, spilled hot chocolate on his jacket, but not a drop of hot chocolate made it to the floor because it froze on his jacket before it had a chance to drip down to the floor. So that'll give you an idea of what that experience was like. And I mean, the Miami team wasn't ready for the weather. That I mean, they weren't ready.
The fact that they've lost now 11 straight games in sub 40 temperatures is kind of embarrassing.
I mean,
like,
Mike,
go practice in the cold somewhere.
Do Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa strike you as cold weather guys? I mean, Tua's from Hawaii, played at Alabama and Miami, and Mike McDaniel looks like a gust of wind would blow him over. They are
tough
that
enough.
Is not a cold weather team.
This is football, man. Toughen up. Tua,
Tua's from Hawaii.
I'm saying it. Tua's a bad quarterback.
Wow. Wow, we're here.
I am planting my flag.
We're here.
At this place. This is my ending summary of these wild card games. The jury is officially back. Tua is not good at the sport of football.
Tua balls out in any indoor stadium in the country.
No,
that's
he doesn't.
That's my take.
He objectively does not.
You're out. You are out.
I am firmly out. All right. Has had enough time and enough like good players to see can he work in a good scheme with basically the most like error-forgiving receivers known to man.
Unbelievable skill position talent around him.
And he cannot get it done. That pick he threw at the beginning of that game was terrible.
It was really bad.
And he does it so consistently. They did it against the Bills, too. My mind is made up.
One of the worst interceptions I've seen, even at the beginning of that game, thrown by Tua, one of the worst interceptions you'll see all year.
Atrocious.
And how much can you blame the weather? I don't know. I wouldn't want to do it out there in that weather. So
he has a powerful arm and is a deep ball merchant throwing to Tyreek.
Yeah. John, next week we got the divisional round. I want to talk about one game. I want to let you talk about one game.
Yep.
Both in the AFC, I think. I think this is where the drama is.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about Texans Ravens. Because
let's talk about it.
The Crunching Tackles podcast is calling the upset here.
We are. We did this independently.
Yeah. We're doing this.
The Texans are winning.
They are.
You heard it here first.
We're in. We are in on the CJ Stroud experience. He is our guy.
He is our guy. You know what? I'm actually altering my prediction for the whole thing.
Let's go.
The Texans are making the Super Bowl.
Let's go.
It is going to happen.
We're in.
The 49ers will play the Texans in the Super Bowl, and the 49ers will win. But the Texans have a sneakily good defense, and the Ravens also have a good defense, but there was one defense that was better than them in the National Football League. Mm. Who was that?
The Cleveland Browns.
It was the Cleveland Browns, and CJ Stroud destroyed the Cleveland Browns.
Made them look like a college team, frankly.
You know what? I mean, like, we've both been Lamar doubters since time immemorial, and he has been better this season. I'll give him that.
Not a believer.
I think CJ Stroud will be, in the long run, a better quarterback than Lamar. And I think he has the opportunity to wow the NFL and make it all the way. And I think that kind of part of that will rely on the other game in the AFC, Chiefs Bills. But I think this could be very well Stroud's moment, and I would love to see it happen.
Here's the thing, John. CJ Stroud is a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson today.
As a passer, 100%.
Lamar Jackson has never been a good passer.
Yep.
At any point in his NFL career. He has been
look at his stats.
He's been an exceptional athlete.
Yep.
A very good runner. And an adequate to mediocre passer of the football.
Yep.
And CJ Stroud not only has game-breaking athleticism, not only can he run and is mobile, but he is an absolute titanic of an arm quarterback. Like, both distance throwing and accuracy, he is almost peerless.
I mean, didn't he lead the league in passing yards per game and touchdown interception ratio this year?
Yes.
That's from a rookie.
Yeah.
He's on the Texans. The Texans.
Unbelievable.
The Texans were atrocious last year.
Yeah.
That's an astonishing work from the Texans front office, first of all, to make the picks they did. C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, who have both been phenomenal this year. I think we're looking at an opportunity for one of the biggest upsets in NFL history, and I would love to see it happen.
Yeah, briefly, John, Chiefs-Bills is the rematch we've been waiting 3 years now for. Mm-hmm. It is probably the most anticipated game of the year. After the apps, I mean, we came on this podcast after Chiefs-Bills saying, was that the greatest NFL game we've ever seen?
Yep.
And I think the answer was yes.
Yeah.
And this is the rematch of that. It's in Buffalo this time. And do you want to just talk about kind of this game? We'll do our picks, but like, what does this game mean to like the calendar like this week? Like, how big is this?
I think if the Chiefs were better this year, this would be even bigger, to be honest. These are not the Chiefs and Bills teams of 3 years ago.
Mm.
Those were the two premier teams that should have been the Super Bowl,
yeah.
But they couldn't both be in the Super Bowl for obvious reasons.
Right.
These are two teams that, one, the Bills struggled to win their division, and one, the Chiefs also almost struggled to win their division with much, obviously they had less competition, but like they were 11-6 this year, which for Mahomes standards is not very good. Their offense has been bad. Their receivers are bad, other than Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. But I think in terms of the players that are there, this is huge, right? Because this is the Bills' chance at redemption.
Yeah.
I don't want to imagine what the motivational speeches Sean McDermott is cooking up right now, because I cannot imagine they're very politically correct given what he's tried in the past. You know, I think Josh Allen will really want this. And the question is, does Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs as a whole have it in them to beat the team that beat them earlier this year?
Yeah. Let's get to our picks. How do you want to do this?
We can just run through them.
Okay.
Do you want to go with yours first?
Sure. This has been fluid for my whole day. I knew we were going to do this today. I've been thinking, I've been changing. I've been debating this for quite a while. And here's where I'm going right now.
Okay.
The AFC Championship.
Yep.
Is going to be the Houston Texans against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
Feel really good about that.
Okay.
The NFC Championship is going to be the 49ers from San Francisco and the Lions of Detroit.
Okay.
So far, so good, right? We're pretty, you know, we got one difference here. But we'll get to that. How about you? What's your super? So going into the championships.
So you're calling, AFC Championship for me. I think the Texans beat the Ravens. And I think the Bills beat the Chiefs. I think they do get the revenge game.
So that's our difference.
Yeah. So I think we're going to have a Texans-Bills AFC Championship. I really do think that's a toss-up game because the Bills can be a train wrecker, and Josh Allen is a phenomenal quarterback when he is on it. And the last 2 years, he has not been on it. But we saw flashes of him and his excellence against Pittsburgh, and we've seen him when he is lights out, he can be the best quarterback in the league. So I don't think this is a foregone conclusion by any means. But there's something special about this Texans team.
Yeah.
Which I did not anticipate. And I think if the Texans can beat this Ravens team, if they can actually prove me right here, they will beat the Bills.
Mm.
I think the Ravens are a much tougher test than the Bills.
Mm.
I think that's the risky pick. I think if the Texans beat the Ravens, they have the momentum to make it all the way. And I do think 49ers, the 49ers will beat the Packers, as good as Jordan Love is. And I think the Lions should make short work of the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
So we will have 49ers Lions in the NFC Championship, and we're going to have Texans 49ers in the Super Bowl.
I like that. Let me think about the Super Bowl here. And I want to think about the Super Bowl by thinking back to September.
Yep.
And actually, I want to think back to the very, very first game of the season.
Chiefs Lions. Yep.
That's where I'm going.
Interesting.
With the same outcome.
The Lions are going to beat the 49ers.
Yeah. And then they're going to beat the Chiefs.
I would love that. I don't see it happening, but I would love it.
I am picking Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions A team built on running the football, playing defense, with a perfectly adequate game manager of a quarterback with Super Bowl experience, although albeit a tough loss to the Patriots, but he's been there before. He's better than he was then.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this matchup before. I think, again, when it comes to the AFC, I will be late to leaving the Patrick Mahomes train. My default is that the best quarterback wins the game and the best coach. And in any version of these matchups, the Chiefs have the best quarterback and they have the best coach. And, you know, 25% of the time I might be wrong picking the Chiefs, but 75% of the time I'm going to be right. And so that's my justification for the Chiefs. And again, this happened like 30 minutes ago where I decided that I'm going to pick it with the Lions to win the Super Bowl. And I'm going to stick with it because I think we've seen this match before. I think the Lions are built the right way. And I think it's overdue.
I think that would be an incredible story.
Yeah.
The Lions have never won a playoff game in 30 years. And everyone made fun of Dan Campbell in his very earnest and intense speeches. Bite your kneecaps. But Dan Campbell, regardless of whether they make the Super Bowl or not, has proven that he's an excellent coach and is making the most of a roster that is talented, but maybe not talented in the way a lot of other teams are.
Yeah.
Not a flashy team by any means.
Yeah.
I am going essentially the opposite route. I do think the Texans, I'm going to pick the Texans to beat the Bills in this game just for kicks and giggles because I think, again, if they can beat the Ravens, they can beat the Bills, and they're going to make it through. The 49ers, to me, are just a more complete team than Detroit. As good as Detroit is, and I think Jared Goff is a slightly better quarterback than Brock Purdy, I think the rest of the 49ers roster will just kind of make the difference in a game like that. They have an exceptional defense, and they have the league's best offense. You know, I'm not the biggest Brock Purdy believer, but I think it's long overdue that Kyle Shanahan gets a Super Bowl. I don't particularly want this result necessarily.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at the teams that are left, if Brock Purdy can play well, they will win the Super Bowl. If he makes errors like he did against the Ravens and fluffs his lines and doesn't perform, you know, there's another alternative that could happen. But I don't see any way where a team not hampered by injuries doesn't come away with the Super Bowl here. And I think that's my final pick. So 49ers beat the Texans to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, here I think part of my thinking here with the 49ers in particular is maybe just a matter of, you know, good team in a mediocre division. They went 5-1 in their division. They played the Seahawks and the Rams and the Cardinals. Like, they're going to, those are a lot of wins there. I mean, that's just not that great of a division. And I'm also not sure that the week off helps them. You know, momentum is a weird thing. You know, if you have injuries that you're dealing with, it helps. If you have, you know, other issues, maybe a week helps. But for the line, I mean, like, are they in much better shape than the Lions, who played a home indoor game and came out of it pretty healthy? I'm not sure. In fact, I think the Lions might have more momentum right now. So it is a zag. Christian McCaffrey is probably one of the best offensive players in the country in any position. They have a perfectly serviceable quarterback. Their defense is unbelievable. But I'm just not sure. I guess it really comes down to the fact that I haven't seen them in a while. Like, I'm really not sure.
Yeah.
Like, what do they look like? The Ravens feel the same way. Like, this past week off has felt like an eternity, where I don't know what I'm going to expect coming out of that. But I just saw the Lions do that to the Rams. I just saw the Texans. Like, I know what I'm looking at in those cases. So
If the Lions can do this, I think it'll be potentially the greatest Super Bowl win in NFL history.
Be great. Be really fun.
I would love it.
Yeah.
Lions-Texans is the Super Bowl that people want.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be my dream.
And the good news is, John, in just a couple of weeks, we're going to come back here and talk about how wrong we were about all of this.
So I'm going to double down on every single take I just had. I will double down on my Tua take. He's washed. This is it.
Anything else for the pod this week before we get out of here?
No, I think we can
Yeah.
We can wrap up. I rewatched Dune last night, and it was a wonderful experience. I'm ready for Dune 2. I'm going to rewatch it again before Dune 2 comes out for the complete experience. But, you know, it felt like the right time.
Someone should put Dune in theaters before March. If it was in the theater, I'd go watch it.
Oh, they better.
I missed it.
I'll be upset. Yeah.
I would like that.
Yep. I hope they do it. Do you have anything else? Anything else for listeners?
I mean, what am I watching? An unbelievable slate of NFL games this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be incredible. Let's repeat. Yeah. Let's repeat that list. Texans, Ravens, Chiefs, Bills, Packers, 49ers, Buccaneers, Lions.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe the Buccaneers, those are all fun teams.
Yeah.
That I want to watch.
Yeah.
It's going to be an awesome Buccaneers. Week. You know, it's going to be good. I can't wait.
Yeah. And then either after that or maybe possibly after the championship week, we'll be back here to talk about it and preview the Super Bowl, which is coming. We're excited. So much going on. We'll talk about the Australian Open the next time we podcast as well. Talk about what's going on there. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about. Maybe more teams in the Premier League will be deducted points. Who knows? Myriad possibilities.
Just like the Oprah meme with financial charges.
You get a deduction. And you get a deduction. Everybody gets a deduction. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
If everyone gets deducted in the league.
Nobody did.
Nobody did. Exactly.
That's the incredible. And if everyone's super, nobody is.
That's the logic that we're leaving you guys with on this wonderful podcast.
I love it. Until next week or next time, guys, we hope that you all continue to be well and be safe, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Cheers, guys.